Let's talk for a moment about personal space. You all know what I'm referring to, that piece of real estate that you keep to yourself, that no one else is allowed to go into. An area that you guard, and when someone encroaches in on your personal space, you maybe feel a little bit violated or uncomfortable. It's a comfort zone. We all feel a little bit safer, a little bit more secure when we just maintain that distance. And I see some of you laughing. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Or you've had your personal space violated recently. But we all have that space. But when we enter into a crowd, we find that our personal space begins to dissolve. It just shrinks and fades away. And we have to contend with bumping into all those people who are around us. And it can be an unsettling feeling. And so if you've been Boxing Day shopping, you know what I'm talking about. If you've been to a concert or a festival, or if you plan to go to the Waterfront Festival this week, you may have to give up some of your personal space. For most of us, as I say, it's when we're in a crowd, a sporting event, or the movie theater, that we lose our personal space. For celebrities or politicians, crowds often form around them. You look at political rallies or when celebrities walk the red carpet at movie premieres. And in these instances, the crowd does an interesting thing. They all want to reach out and touch the individual who has captured their attention, to shake hands, to touch their clothing, and then to say what afterwards? I will never wash this hand again, right? I'll never wash this hand again. I touched so and so. Personal issues of space are forgotten in a desire to reach out and touch that one individual. And of course, in the process, we violate their personal space. This is the scene that we find ourselves in Mark's gospel story this morning. This is what's happening to Jesus. He is moving through a crowd, and everyone in that crowd just wants to touch him, wants to be near him. The crowds have surrounded him. And the disciples are acting more like security guards in a vain attempt to keep the crowd at bay, to keep them back from Jesus. Of course, it's of no use. The people who have gathered are reaching out and touching him. He's being bumped from the left and from the right. And in the midst of all of this, there is one woman in the crowd. A woman who, if she is discovered, could find her life forfeit. Yet, there she is with the rock-solid belief that if she can touch Jesus, she will be healed. So she wades through the crowd, reaches out, touches the cloak that Jesus is wearing. "Who touched me?" is the response that we get from Jesus. "Who touched me?" as he realizes the power goes out of him. An odd question to ask when everyone around you is touching you, which is exactly how the disciples respond. The disciples who were so often clueless actually, in my opinion, get one right here. Everyone is touching Jesus. "Who touched me?" What an outrageous thing to say in the middle of a crowd. Of course, Jesus knows who he is referring to. Jesus knows the power went out of him when the woman touched his clothing. So his question is largely rhetorical. However, only he and the woman know that. And what of that woman? What makes her so special in this story. Beyond the healing that occurs, there is a lot at play here with that woman that is completely lost to us as modern readers of this story. So let's take a look at this woman, and in doing so, we will gain some perspective on just how much Jesus was willing to turn the world on its head. We know, because Mark tells us, that this woman has been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She's exhausted her resources looking for a cure from doctors. And upon hearing about Jesus, she thinks, surely this man can heal me. If I can but touch his cloak, I will be healed. So she fights that day with the crowd to get close enough to touch Jesus, believing that she will be healed. And of course, we know that she was. The text says immediately that her bleeding stopped and she was freed from her suffering. If we do some research, we learn some additional information about this woman, which the story doesn't explicitly tell us. But if we were a reader of Mark's gospel at the time he wrote it, we would understand it by social context. This woman, she belonged to the lowest of the low in society. Perhaps not originally, but because of the bleeding, which would not stop, she would have been considered an outcast. She was considered ritually unclean because of the bleeding. Simply touching this woman would also make you ritually unclean. Commenter Scott Hoyes explains it this way. This woman had a, and he quotes, female problem. And according to ancient law, it made her an outcast. For the good of all, she needed to remain far away from other people because so long as her problem persisted, she carried the contagion of unholiness. Touch this woman or be touched by her and you couldn't go to God's temple for a week. In other words, if it becomes known that she was putting the community at risk, she could be stoned to death. She's been socially dead for a dozen years. And although people might feel bad about that, there was nothing they could do about it. But if she could not quietly accept her socially mortified status, the community would have no choice but to remove her forcibly before she did more damage. It's a bit of a mouthful. What it means is what the woman did that day in going into the crowd is that she knowingly risked her own life. Because of her bleeding, she was socially dead. Her family would have had no contact with her, which is why she was at the bottom of society, an outcast, an exile. Make no mistake that on that day, as she waded through the crowd, she touched a great deal of other people. However, such was her belief in Jesus that she was willing to risk death. And I believe that this woman and Jesus' response to the situation is very informative, and that we have a great deal to learn here. We can learn from her faith that believed that Jesus had the power to cure, the power to heal. So what hurts exist in our communities, I wonder, within our own context that Jesus' healing power could be applied? Do we believe that healing is possible? Do we have that faith? We can look at the bravery of this woman. First, she was a woman, and she wanted to touch a man, intentionally touch a man, who was not in her family and to whom she was not married. within the context of society, this was something that just wasn't done. Worse, she had a medical condition which made her ritually unclean. And she wanted to touch Jesus, a man she was not related to, believing that she would be made clean, that she would be healed. The faith and the bravery of this woman, the conviction of her beliefs to go against the grain of everything that society is telling her is correct. And what part does Jesus play in the drama? Jesus realized at once that power had gone out of him. All those hands touching him, all those people bumping into him, and he's aware of the power going out. He's aware of this woman's faith. He's intimately connected to his surroundings. He's aware of his context. And we too need to be aware of what waves our passing makes. When we go out to do God's work, how often do we do work that we hadn't originally intended to do? Because our presence makes waves. Our faith and our belief in God makes waves. Our actions make waves. And we need to be aware of how that works and plays out. But it is that woman's first response to Jesus when he asks the question, "Who touched me?" It is her response there which I think is so significant. First, as I said, I believe that Jesus knew exactly who had touched him. He knew exactly what had just happened. However, Jesus does not call the woman out. He does not say, "You, it was you who touched me." He simply asks, "Who touched you?" The woman comes forward of her own volition. She could have remained silent, but she comes forward with fear and trembling. She knows that she has been healed, but still with fear and trembling for what she does next. She falls at Jesus' feet and tells him the whole truth. She tells him about her condition, about how that would make her ritually unclean, how she entered the crowd, touching many people, and finally, about how she was healed. In short, her truth-telling is enough to incriminate her. Yet she responds openly and honestly. The woman told Jesus the whole truth. Jesus already knew what had happened. However, the woman doesn't seek to hide anything. There is no shame in her telling the truth. How often is the truth viewed as an inconvenience, as something to be avoided? How often do we tell a little white lie to avoid a spot of trouble? Here we witness a woman telling the truth and risking her own life in doing so. That is faith. That is trusting in the goodness of God. And I would argue that the telling of the truth in this story is the true act of faith that Jesus refers to. Not her faith that Jesus could heal her, but her faith that in Jesus she could be open and honest. It is a reminder that Jesus came not to judge, but to save, to heal us and to offer God's grace to us. In Christ, we have nothing to fear, not the truth, not our problems. Now, you can imagine that the crowd probably wasn't too happy to hear the whole truth the woman shared. And though Mark in his writing does not really deal with the crowd after this fact, they're still there. And I can imagine they're not too happy to learn how they have been touched, how they have had their personal space violated, how that has resulted in them being made ritually unclean. However, before they can rise up against this woman, Jesus does a remarkable thing. He calls her daughter, and he sends her off with a benediction. "Go in peace," he tells her. Friends, how does this story inform our living? This woman and Jairus' daughter, who we haven't dealt with, let's be honest, in the context that Mark's gospel was written, in the world that they lived, they were not important people. They were not religious leaders. They were not political leaders. They were not business leaders. They were not military leaders. They were not important matriarchs within their community. For all intents and purposes, this woman and Jairus' daughter were nobodies. No one pays any attention to the woman. She's just an anonymous face in a crowd. Only Jairus is concerned about his daughter, and if she matters at all, it's because he is a religious leader. And I don't say these things to be callous. In fact, just the opposite. Why do these two women matter? Because Jesus tells us that they do. Because Jesus takes the time to speak to that woman after she has been healed. Because Jesus goes and he heals the little girl. This is why they matter. Jesus tells us that they matter. And who do these women represent? The marginalized, the downtrodden, the outcast. Neither one of these women has any power in a social context. The one woman has been socially dead for a dozen years, as if she was dead. But Jesus sees them. And Jesus understands their worth. How does this story inform our living? Do we have the faith of this woman? Can we trust enough to be open and honest? Do we follow in the example of Jesus and see the worth and the value of all people? This is a story that is about far more than healing. It is a story about community, about acceptance. And it's my prayer that we, as a community of faith, can continue to share the truth, the good news that we know about Jesus. And in doing so, we can ensure that our doors are always open to all people, from all places, at all times. Amen.